Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star Fuentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans around the world. Visit her website at www.starfuentes.com and then join her here every Wednesday night on Spiritual Connections Radio as she shares her knowledge with you. And now, Star Fuentes.
Good day, everybody, and this is Star. At the half hour, if you have a intuitive question, something you need to know or confirm, call me at 646-716-9663. 646-716-9663. This evening, I have a special guest. Her name is Rachel. She's a student of metaphysics, healing, and spirituality. And I thought that it would be very interesting and educational for us to listen to what a student and a teacher have to say together. And many of you are bordering on that line of teaching. Many of you are students. Rachel is a good, firm student, and she's bordering on that line where very quickly, very soon, she will be a spiritual teacher. So, welcome, Rachel.
Hi, Star.
It's so nice to have you here. All right. My first question to you is, what was your wake-up call? What directed you to come to the world of metaphysics and spirituality?
I actually had a very interesting experience. When I was about 23, I had been given lots of pharmaceutical drugs when I was a young child and diagnosed with clinical depression and ADHD. And I had developed a serious amount of depression, and I had become addicted to many of these drugs. One of them was Wellbutrin. And I had gotten so high off this drug that I started hallucinating and started also breaking down, like, what reality was. And every night
okay,
I would...
Stop. You know, I don't know, sometimes these drugs are not hallucinations. What happens is the door opens up between parallel universes or dimensions,
yes.
And what people who think they're hallucinating and seeing and hearing things are, and then other groups of people are really hallucinating and hearing things.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead.
Okay, so one night I had taken so many that I started to see these little extraterrestrials. And I started to feel like parallel realities were starting to open up into me. And I could start putting my hands through different realities and different worlds. And it kind of was, it was scary and it was thrilling and it was fascinating all at the same time. And I had received a message from these beings that I would start to wake up and do some fascinating and phenomenal things in like the metaphysical capacity, and I wasn't really quite sure how to think about it. The next day, I had been hospitalized that night, and the next day, my mom was wanting to put me in, have me go to a psychiatrist, and they thought I was going to be diagnosed with schizophrenia, and it was really like facilitated by these medications, because when I wouldn't take the medications, nothing would really ever happen. And as I progressed throughout the years, I would meet people that would have very similar, they'd have very similar experiences, and I connected with a relationship of mine with my boyfriend at the time, and he had some similar experience with, like, extraterrestrial beings. And one night we had a shared experience, which really woke me up. And I knew from that point it wasn't about me being crazy and it wasn't about just the drugs. We had had very metaphysical experiences that other people were also included in. And it wasn't necessarily facilitated by any exterior means, by drugs or rituals or anything like that. So from that point on, I started becoming fascinated with the idea of there being more than just this physical plane and just what we know of as today.
Okay. So one of the things I frequently encounter is people who have awakening experiences where their awakening experience isn't just a little nudge. It's like they're kicked out of this universe and they're kicked into another universe and they see things around people like the aura or thought forms. They hear voices. And one of the things is people don't know that they need to keep this sacred. And sacred is not secret. It is to yourself so you can integrate this wisdom and knowledge. And many, many times I have seen people who have had Kundalini rising and have awakened all their chakras, and they start trying to convince a family member or trying to convince their boyfriend, lover, girlfriend, wife, husband that there are these holes in this wall, and if you reach your hand through it, or there's bad energy, black energy around the knee. And if you're out there and experiencing these things, you need to look inside of yourself. Are you really hallucinating? Are you in another universe, parallel universe? Are you in another dimension? And, Rachel, you got a big clue about this because you started looking for other people who were having similar experiences without the drugs, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And you found those people out there, so you knew that there was something more. So where did that take you as a student of metaphysics, or just as that awakening came? Where did you start searching first, and in what type of teachings, in yourself, in groups, what?
So I actually started more on a darker path than just the average spiritual seeker. I was more fascinated in the idea of extraterrestrial and magic and psychic phenomena, not necessarily in a dark capacity, but not necessarily in a very light and servicing way either. So it was kind of more a neutral place to come from. I was fascinated by Harry Potter and how the idea of magic and manifestation, and that was brilliant to me, and I wanted to kind of pursue that path. And when I started to awaken a lot of my psychic capacities over the next 4 or 5 months, it would come quickly, and I would just start to open up rapidly. The problem was is that I was then accessing a lot of spirits and entities that were not of the light. And so I was bothered by them constantly, harassed by them. I became kind of sucked into a world that I wasn't really prepared for. Or educated about. I was completely lost. And I didn't know who to go to or what to go to. I had finally read a book by Amora Kuan Yin, who talks about, she is a woman who works with Pleiadian light work. It was another extraterrestrial spiritual healing modality that I was interested in. And she was talking about something, when you open up your psychic capacities without really having your heart chakra and your crown chakra open, that will naturally attract a lot of negative entities and negative beings around you. And so when I realized that I needed to go on a more spiritual path to actually heal myself and heal all of these beings around me, that was more of the answer. And as I began more of the path on towards the light, things started to clear up. Things started to heal. My life started to transform, and everything began to kind of fix itself in really natural ways without having to try so hard. So that's kind of how I began this more spiritual path.
And how is it that you find the discipline, the determination to continue on this path? You're pretty young. You're in your late 20s, and you stick with this, and you read and you work your spiritual path. Where does this determination and discipline inside of you come from? And when it disappears, how do you get yourself back there?
Okay, so I am a very competitive person, and I try to use a lot of my own what could be considered inner demons to my advantage. And so I kind of channel a lot of my competitive nature or my drive for excellence into understanding what excellence really is. And like, when I can understand, like, excellence is learning how to refine your energies to be beautiful and loving. So I go into more of that place, and that's what I decide I want to do. If I want to be competitive, I want to be the best that I can be. So I make sure that that's who I become. So I'm trying to, or I tend to take a lot of these more negative aspects of me and really channel them into being of service and making myself better and really improving my life. And when I do that,
you kind of tamed your gremlins, huh?
Yeah. When I do that, my life gets better, and it's a reward. It's rewarding, and there's not in my life. It never gets easier, but it gets more tolerable is not the word. It just gets more alive and more fulfilling.
Mm-hmm. So when you're in harmony inside of yourself, you actually go with the flow that the world is going with or the position you're in. And when you're in less harmony with yourself, well, you get out of the flow. Am I correct in assuming that?
That's a very interesting contextual argument. I will use the position that I'm in to the best that it can serve me. And whether or not that means I'm in the flow, I have no idea. But I will take what's given to me, and I will somehow make it good
for me. That's good indeed. And usually I kind of know stuff. You know, when I get up and I step on the dog bone, fall over on the chair, then slip to the floor, I kind of know that I have to change my energy because just getting out of bed is hard. I kind of mm-hmm. know that when I'm in the flow, the phone calls happen, the dog hands me money. You know, things happen that are so synchronistic. And my ego can say to me all day long, Star, you're in the flow. You're really well connected. But my physical environment will tell me you are connected or not. Ouch, I bumped my leg on a chair. Your path of energy as you move through the physical world will tell you if you're in alignment, will tell you if you're in the flow. You know, it's amazing how I can be in the flow, and then the next minute I'm taking a bite of my lunch, and I eat my hair, and my lunch falls to the floor, and the dog eats it, and as I'm trying to get the dog, I roll over my toe with the office chair. And I've seen and physically experienced when I get out of alignment. So sometimes I am not the best decision maker of whether I'm in the flow or not. The physical environment is a place that gives me constant feedback if I pay attention. So I'm kind of really liking what you're saying, but I'm going to kind of tell you that being 50 years older than you, I always watch out for the environment to tell me whether I'm in the flow or not. Have you found that the environment speaks to you of your results?
Yeah, the best way that I can measure that is when I take dance or yoga classes, and my performance and my ability to center myself and my ability to do things is completely dependent on my ability to step into the flow or not.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. So how have your personal relationships evolved since you've been studying metaphysics and spirituality? And tell us more about what happened when your heart chakra got more attuned and opened.
Well, the friends that I make now are very real. It doesn't get easier, but the people that I become friends with are more like my friends for life, and they're there for me when we disagree and when we fight, and it's a different way of working with people. I'm from LA. There tend to be a fair amount of very superficial relationships that go on in that kind of a city, and you barely know your neighbors. You're lucky if you have a few friends that you see normally, and your good friends, it's highly unlikely that you spend a lot of time with, because everybody lives about an hour away from each other if you live on the opposite side of the city. So it's very much dependent on who you see every day. I'm very fortunate that I have become friends with this groups of spiritually minded people, because they tend to always be there. And
that's a very interesting conclusion. And if you fight with a spiritual friend, you guys look at your stuff, get it out of the way, own it, become accountable for it, and very quickly, or maybe not so quickly, but you're friends again soon. And it's when you stop speaking to a person forever and ever because they insulted you. And when it's you're offended by something and you can't get over it. And when you make friends with someone, only whatever thing you participated in or wherever you made friends with them doesn't exist anymore. Your friendship doesn't exist. So having spiritual friends and having metaphysical friends, and now with Skype and Facebook and all the media, people have the ability to stay in touch frequently. But the ability to judge, to isolate yourself, to use rationalization and intellectualization to keep yourself isolated. And the reason why people do that is they don't want anybody ever to get close, because, my God, they're going to have to open up their heart chakra. And once you open up your heart chakra, you're going to find a lot of things. You're going to find people calling you their best friend, and you might well be their best friend. They may not be yours. You may find people coming to you and saying, blah, and they'll tell you stuff they haven't even told their therapist. And that's about a healer with the heart chakra open. And opening your heart chakra is very important, because the compassion, the empathy, leads to a very, very high connection and to soon becoming one with all. And of course you'll have your personality and your own identity, but you can be there in many ways for other people. And when you can do that, you can be there for yourself. So tell me, what did you work on after you worked on your heart chakra?
I started opening up my throat chakra this last year, and that came very interesting and very difficult at the same time. All of the times that I was always feeling like I was not able to discuss with people what might cause conflict or not be appropriate, or what I deemed appropriate to to speak about has kind of become very important to mention up front. And that has been a huge lesson for me.
Well, like, you know, I guess it's about being diligent. And you have to kind of remember that, you know, 50% of the input you get is about other people's stuff and filter through their stuff. And 50% of the input you do get is correct and accurate. And finding that place in yourself where you can be really clear on what's you and really mm-hmm. clear on what's other people and what's a truth, the truth, or truth, because all of them exist simultaneously. So that solar plexus and that in the throat chakra are really important to work on once you've worked on your heart chakra. And you will find that 10 years later or 20 years later or a year later, you'll go back and work on the heart chakra again and then either work on the throat chakra or the solar plexus. And the spiritual work and being a spiritual student is like kind of like a cosmic onion. Whatever you worked on before and you work through, you're going to work on it on a you know different level with a higher frequency, with higher vibrations. So I think that was a very good step for you to take. Now, knowing you, I see that you do your work and that you practice your techniques, that you stay conscious, you stay aware, you stay in your body as much as you can. You do your homework, you know, whatever your spiritual homework may be. How do you get to a place, and I know for me it was very, very difficult, to where that I mean my mind kind of just dropped aside and the spiritual metaphysical work and the working with God, community, and all became so important and so clear to me that my spiritual work was not work, that it wasn't a burden, that these weren't tasks I was doing because I wanted an outcome. These were things I was being. How do you keep doing all the work you do, and how did you start being your practice?
Where I am not quite in that place where I'm not outcome driven. I have goals, and I believe that where I'm succeeding in my practice, I will reach those goals, and I'm motivated enough and want these things enough in my life, and they're so important to me that I want to make sure that I can achieve them, that's what drives me to continue being.
Well, that is important, and for me, one of the things that took me a couple decades to get in the spiritual and metaphysical realm was the maintenance chores, that chopping wood, carrying water, taking out the garbage, the cooking and cleaning, and all that stuff was really part of the spiritual metaphysical path. And when I make it, oh, my God, I have to wash dishes, or oh, my God, I have to clean, or whatever the chore may be, when I make it work, it becomes so. And when I make it unspiritual, it becomes so. And living that life where you're being what you do and how great to sweep a floor. And as you move the broom from side to side, you're clear, clean, dust-free. And you're putting your energy in it. And when you cook, to stir trust and faith into a soup. And when you're washing the dishes or whatever it is, to be in such a place where you're not thinking about what you should have, would have, could have done or what's on the grocery list for tomorrow, to literally be there. And for me, it was like for a decade, it was always a resentment that these chores were taking me away from my spiritual life till I grew up spiritually. And once I became these chores and been in the now time, it really made a difference in the speed of my progress, of manifestation. It made a difference in how quickly I got my goals, how cash, love, and paying clients came to me, how I felt about myself. So I guess, what is your biggest spiritual, metaphysical discovery or insight you had that changed your life?
I have actually, the biggest impactful thing that has impacted is during my yoga practices, there will be some days where I can do almost anything I want with my body and days where I cannot. And I will be able to twist my body or lift my body up and just use the chi and the energy to gracefully move my body, where it's not about me being a physical being, but being one with light. And when I can get into that place, I feel like I can do almost anything I want. And that has been one of the most valuable lessons, is that learning how to channel that energy into the physical is the whole premise of how any magic is created. And it's not something that will come in the future. It's something that's happening in the now. And that, to me, is brilliant and beautiful and incredibly magical.
Well, you know, I always like looking up the word magic in the dictionary, because the first definition is knowing something that somebody else does not, having a firm understanding or knowledge of a topic that is obscure. And then number three is sleight of hand, you know, like taking a rabbit out of a hat. So knowing that your chi can move your body, knowing that you can think about somebody, and 75% of the time they call, and being able to direct your life towards your goals, what you want to manifest, in a holy from holistic sense. Well, I guess holy from holy sense, too. So that you become in alignment and connected and in the flow, and have that diligence and discipline that you have. What was your greatest surprise in metaphysics and spirituality?
Oh, that is probably the extraterrestrials still kind of freaks me out. I think that the idea of a lot of beings living here with us and us not necessarily seeing them, anytime I have an encounter with any kind of being, an etheric being, that always surprises me. It never gets old.
Mm-hmm. I remember, you know, talking once to a ghost years and years ago, and the spirit's there, and I'm seeing through it, and I'm knowing it's a spirit, and it was a dead person, and I'm talking to it, and it's talking to me, and he says, "Wow, nobody else hears me who's in a body." And I said, "Do you know your dad?" And he went, "No, is that? That's why nobody can hear me." I go, "Yeah, you know, there's light." And I remember seeing things and then finally when I had teachers who could see things and explain auras and explain entities and thought forms and weird, strange, you know, cat people or blue-headed people or grays or whatever it was to me, I think it was such a relief inside of me, because you got to imagine what that was like in the 50s, you know. You have to imagine, you know, in the 60s when the beatniks were around, and in the 70s when the hippies were around. That was open public talk in some places about that. But sometimes it's petrifying, terrifying, and you doubt your own sanity because you have not been educated in the dimensional world, in the world of spirit, and in the world of portals, where you can actually have contact with the energy fields of extraterrestrial, sentient beings. So We got about a minute left till we get to our next section. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us?
Oh, I think that it must have, I feel very lucky nowadays to have not really woken up until now, because there is a very large community out there now. And talking about stuff like this and finding the other people is not difficult.
Good.
And I just want to share that for any people that do feel lost, that there are lots of people and lots of communities and lots of schools that can definitely help you.
Good. And we're coming up onto our station break here in a second. And remember, if you want
to
call me.
You're listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star Fuentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans around the world. Visit her website at www.starfuentes.com and then join her here every Wednesday night on Spiritual Connections Radio as she shares her knowledge with you. Once again, Star Fuentes.
Thank you. And if you want to ask me a question, you want confirmation, if you're curious, but not if you're bored, give me a call at 646-716-9663, and I'll gladly answer any question you have. So, Rachel, I find that there's a lot of different kinds of students and metaphysical students. And there are students who go for it. And then there are students who hesitate at every turn. They may be severely blocked. They doubt their intuition. They'd rather be against metaphysics, or they'll get into the show me state where you have to show them everything. And students who take many, 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 many years to go through the material thoroughly. And my students who get something and disappear for 3 years till they integrate it. In your observation of yourself, I know that you're the determined get-through-it-now student. What would you consider your greatest asset in being a student besides getting through it?
Okay, so most of me, I say get through it, get through it, get through it, and then it's really not until a year later that I actually understand what I just did the year before. And it's very interesting because I have taken like classes like light language or something like that, and I will just start to comprehend what I just took, which a year later, after practicing for a year. Yoga is another class. Like, I've been practicing yoga for maybe off and on for about 8 to 10 years, and I'm just now understanding what I'm doing with my body. And so I am a rapid go-getter. But when I can sit there and slow down and just trust that when I'm ready, the knowledge will come to me, and it will come so juicy and so brilliantly that it trumps everything that I thought I knew a year ago. That, to me, is probably the biggest asset, is when I understand that.
Yeah, in 1971, when I taught somebody a particular topic, it took me a year to teach them off and on, living next door to them. It took me about a year to teach them something. That very same class I teach now in 2.5 hours. And for all you listeners out there, I want to inform you that some very great things are going on. The more people who visit Being One, visit Being Connected, and I don't care what religion you are, there are many, many ways to source. Even some people have no religions and they're very spiritual. Many ways to source. I want you to understand that last year's highest light, whatever that big aha insight was, may be this year's lowest light. So as you filter through who you are and what you're learning and what you need and what your goals are, the thing you strive for the most last year, the energy that brightened you, may no longer be suitable in your reality and may no longer contain the kind of charge and significance to keep you going. I know there's many books like The Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East, who it seems like every decade I reread it and get, of course, books 1 to 3, I reread it and I get another meaning out of it and I get another aha in different places. And it so seems with my personality and the number of teachers I had who taught me how to be and teachers who taught me how not to be. But as the decades go by, I learn that something that wasn't important 20 years ago becomes very potent to me right now. So as you go through your process, what you didn't need, what you ignored, what you already studied really hard 10 years ago, you're going to revisit it again, and it's going to have another intensity for you. It's going to light you up in different ways. And when I was a student, and we used to say, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And now that I'm a teacher, I say, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And when the teacher is ready, the student will disappear. Because teaching spirituality and teaching metaphysics is kind of like going to grad school. My students bring me so much insight into who I am, most importantly, who I'm not. And when I'm not living my own teachings or walking my own talk. So students are very good for that. How have you been with your teachers, Rachel?
I outgrow my teachers so quickly. I feel like a 3-year-old that has clothes. And what happens is it's very, unless the teacher is like a master, I probably will outgrow them within a year or two. And I find that I will find these teachers, especially earlier in my spiritual awakening, is that I would find these teachers who would talk about these spiritual teachings, and I would look into their aura, and I would be like, but I don't believe you. And, like, I don't believe anything you say, or I believe only a small amount, and I see that there's so many hypocrisies going on, I just can't stick around. And that it was very difficult, so I would jump from person to person until I could stick around and find something that was much more legitimate. The more legitimate that I found that it was, the longer I could stay.
Mm-hmm. I kind of have that history, too. I stayed with 13 teachers, 11 months, and then I stayed with Esperanza for about 3 years, whose lineage I now hold, and I spent 3 years with her. But for me, it was like 11 months, and I was out of there. You know, whether it was Korea or Yogyakarta or India or Africa, and it seemed I had this place where either I absorbed all their teachings and their downloads and would need to step away and integrate it, or where when I found my path as a curandera with Esperanza, I couldn't get enough. I mean, one day I came to my Palapa hut and my luggage was all packed up, and she says, okay, take this out in the world and spread it. And I start crying, like, you're kicking me out. And, you know, like, and I mean, I got real personal about it, which at that point in time I shouldn't have been. But, yeah, she packed my bags because I would have stayed another, you know, whatever, as long as she would have let me stay. But my bags, she goes, oh, God, take the teachings out and spread them through the world. And I was, like, hurt. You know, like, what did I do wrong, when it was probably what I had done right. And in my spiritual maturity, she could trust me to take those teachings out there. What else do you have to say about the student-teacher relationship?
It's probably one of the most interesting relationships you can have. My experience with it is so much like my relationship with my mom. Most of my spiritual teachers, that there was a large power struggle going on, and I didn't recognize it until, like, it was too late. And there was and then there's also a big amount of my rebelliousness that I would just want to give it all up and leave. And they're very dynamic, and they're very much going to point out every single thing that you have wrong with you very quickly. And they don't even have to say it. It will just manifest before your eyes. And it's like the biggest test that God could ever give you is to recognize where you need to be able to say no, where you need to be able to speak your truth. And it will show you so consistently, because if you don't stand up for any of them, your teachers will walk all over you.
Good. And I understand that sometimes teachers will walk all over you, and sometimes teachers will tempt you to not stand up for your truth. I mean, I've had teachers that just watch me, you know, tangle myself into knots, and, you know, then at one point in time said, bye, you all tangle the knots, and other teachers who said, wait, you're tangling yourself into a knot, or can you rethink this? And with my teacher, Esperanza, she just had to look at me. And I knew that I was messing up. I knew that I was off on the wrong train of thought. I knew that I was out of integrity. I was out of connection. I was out of alignment. I was out of the flow. She just had a look. And I don't know if you call it a disciplinary look, but it was like this pay attention, be aware look that was just a little bit sharper than pay attention, be aware. And if I ever had to do it again with all 13 or 14 teachers I've been with, I think I'd go back and do it all over again. I'd go live in Africa and in India and all the places I've been, and all the physical hardships that I had during that time. Spiritually, mentally, and emotionally, I benefited from living in stick huts or palapa huts or, you know, an ashram or wherever I lived with these teachers. Whatever it was that was physically uncomfortable soon became very unimportant for me. And knowing when my light became so great, some teachers reacted by stomping all over me, kicking me out, calling me a black magician, and other teachers congratulated me and told me to move on. It was very interesting to notice how the teacher would react when my level of light raised to a certain high degree. Have you had an experience like where a teacher, when you raised to her light level or his light level, where a teacher just threw you out, basically, or verbally, physically pushed you away?
Yeah, I'm actually experiencing that right now as I advance in my studies and start to progress. I have a bunch of teachers that are all in, like, a group of people in a specific modality or place that have kind of disowned me and talk bad about me because I've chosen a path that isn't quite theirs. And it's very hurtful because I spent a lot of time and energy and love, and I stood up for these people when other people were kind of putting them down. And I invested my heart into them, and they have apparently not done the same for me. And I find it breaks my heart. It's really hard. It's not an easy thing to go through.
Well, you do know
that
at the time you invested your heart, that was the best thing you could do, and is invest your heart and keep them in integrity in your soul. And now when you get more light and when you get more conscious and your connection to God, to Source, becomes wider, fatter, a mile wide, if you don't let go of these people, God, Source, will create gossip, maliciousness, and stuff to make you walk away from them so you can move on to the level that you need to move on. And I have not had ungraceful and very graceful endings with my teachers. I've had ungraceful and very graceful endings with my students. And it ends, or it continues, and sometimes not by any of our choices, but by the big picture, where Spirit God wants you. And, you know, that old, for every door that closes, two doors open, truth that happens. So you will experience both types of teachers as you go through your path. Now, you're in a very interesting situation. You're on a borderline, and you've had a lot of teachings for 10 years or so. You've been studying metaphysics, spirituality. You do private sessions right now and consultations on your own. You have the capacity to step into teaching some classes in the next 4 months to a year, and you're kind of like on that borderline between student, apprentice, and testing out your mastery. How does that make you feel? And tell me about that.
It's the weirdest place, because it's like my ego gets the best of me, because I'm like, I feel like I'm being called a student, and I'm like, but I am not just a student anymore, and like I want to push forward, but then I'm like, I'm not quite ready to go forward. I haven't really manifested what I feel like I need to have manifest that prove within myself that this is what I can now teach people. And it's like trying to teach a millionaire's class and not quite having been a millionaire. Like, that's kind of where I'm at right now. I'm like, I'm kind of at the, I've gotten to about the $600,000 mark, and now I can teach the millionaire's class. It's not quite there yet. I still need to work I need to follow through with what I've been doing.
Oh, you need to become what you're going to teach.
I need to become what I'm going to teach, correct.
And that, people don't get it. And it's funny that I see, like you were talking, cash classes by people who don't have $100,000 in assets, and they're teaching you how to be a millionaire. And I see people who teach manifestation classes, and they teach it because they need to learn to manifest, and because that's their next accomplished goal, or they're a master at manifestation. And for you, I really specifically want to tell you, seeing the whole big picture, what does the teacher have to go through? Like living with Esperanza, I mean, and washing her clothes and kneeling on the riverbank and washing her clothes, going, why am I down here washing her clothes? And then all of a sudden seeing grids of light pouring into me that she left on her clothes. And I was being so ungrateful and whiny. And then seeing everything that Esperanza did, how she got the people to come to her, when people were negative about her decisions, how she let them rest till they came to their own realization. And the modern-day spiritual teacher has so many things. I mean, spirituality, media, brochures, promotional stuff for their classes, and money and centers and cash and taxes and bookkeeping and constant phone communication from students. And I mean, it's so much more than when I just went and sat in front of a teacher. I flew to that country. I lived in that country for 11 months with somebody, and we ate and we worked together, did the maintenance together, and we did the clients together, and I got my lessons. But in the world that we're moving in right now, I mean, wow, how can you, I mean, you got to have Facebook. You got to have all the other stuff. And I think living with a teacher and watching a teacher go through his or her process of how does the class develop, how does that book start, how, when do they know when they're on and when they're off to work with stuff and not work with stuff? Can they make that decision when they're connected? So I think being an apprentice and being real close to a teacher, and what you want in a teacher is somebody who's been there for, you know, 10, 20 years, who has the amount of clients that you want, who teaches the amount of classes that you want to teach, and who has that walk your talk, that that mastery sense and beingness about them. So for many of you who are on that line out there between the student, the chela, and on that line of apprenticeship and mastership, pay attention. You don't want a teacher who's been doing metaphysics for only a year or spirituality for two. Pay attention. What are they manifesting in their life? And if that is what you want, but not exactly to be like them as them, but the capacity to manifest, the capacity to connect, the capacity to teach, to heal, to write, to love, and that capacity for patience. I mean, this is who you want to hang out with. This is who you want to learn from. And please remember, just because you've outgrown a teacher doesn't make that teacher bad, mad, or wrong. Move forward. Move on. Gently say goodbye. Gently say goodbye and go do your work, whatever it may be. I find that periods of integration are very important. I would go someplace for 11 months and I'd come back to the States and I work as a shorter cook or in a plant store or do something fairly mundane, even though, you know, 6 weeks later I'd be doing readings. I'd be doing something to integrate the times which I spent with that teacher, the times where I sat with that master. I come back, and like Rachel says, man, it took her a year to get stuff. I'm 20-some years gone from Esperanza. Oh, God, more than that. Almost 31 years gone from Esperanza, and I'm still integrating stuff she taught me. And, yeah, and it's really, really interesting how one morning I wake up and I've got ideas in my head and I think I'm so great, and then I realize that this came from Esperanza, one of my other spiritual teachers, and how they ignited this whole teaching in me, and they made me, you know, be a citizen of my soul instead of a traveler in my soul. I got to know what I wanted and what my passion was and how to spread light. You know, masters and students and teachers come in many sizes, shapes, and kind. Remember that your plumber, your neighbor, and the person who you hate the most can be one of the best teachers of how not to be or how to be for you. As a student, be aware that God doesn't bring anything into your presence that doesn't teach you how to be, how not to be. That Spirit, God, Earth, Source, knows what you can handle and won't ever give you anything more than you can handle, even though you feel like you're drowning, sliding downhill, that you're overwhelmed with all this stuff on your plate. Remember that Source will never give you anything more than you can handle, especially if you're a student and you have a teacher. Now, I've had a couple of students who really challenged me, challenged me with my patience, challenged me with their integration time, and proudly to say that two of them are teachers this day and very good spiritual master teachers. One of them just kind of disappeared off the map and is leading a mediocre life someplace. So what happens in the teacher-master-student experience is you come to a teacher to choose, to be in the light at a certain vibration or continue to live at the vibration you are. So your pattern can keep you stuck, can have you walk away. Your inspiration can push you through that teacher and that information, whether it's how not to be or how to be teachings. So take a deep breath. Rachel, we have about 5 more minutes. What else would you like to say about being a metaphysical, spiritual student in how your life and world has changed or anything else you'd like to add to?
Well, I will completely agree with you about being an apprentice for a master teacher or being an apprentice for who you want to be with, because ultimately that is what I had been yearning for years. I had wanted to go off to a Buddhist monastery or but that path wasn't for me. I was thinking of, like, can I go out for a nunnery, but that path wasn't. And I was just really longing for this opportunity to work with a master teacher so I could get that knowledge and so that I could get that wisdom. And I really want to be a master teacher and build a large school and practice that. And it's so rewarding and so fulfilling to be able to get to that place in my life where I now get to be an apprentice, and I get to see that, and I get to see what the teacher needs to do to make her classes happen, and how much back work there is and how much prep work there is. And if, when you go to a class, you have no idea that the teacher has spent 6 months preparing that class and has a staff helping her prepare that class for you, or her or him. And there is so much knowledge that they put into that class, and you only get a fraction of that on the conscious level. And to see and be a part of the back work of putting together a class, that's amazing, because it's fulfilling, and you learn a tremendous amount, and it's kind of fascinating to see how much the teachers go through if they're, like, fully qualified, when they're fully qualified to really be teaching a class.
It is, isn't it? It's you know, for me, teaching other teachers to teach, it's really interesting. And I say, you know, okay, you taught chocolate 2 years ago. I still want you to go out and buy another $100 worth of books on chakras. Read up on what the people are there and go again. And even if you don't change your class, the download, the information you studied on chakras, on auras, on dimensions, on extraterrestrials, whatever it is that you studied, is given to every person in that room, even if it's only a 2-hour class, but you did 120 hours worth of work. So
thank you.
Being that teacher is being rich. So thank you for being with me, Rachel.
You're welcome, Star.
On behalf of Spiritual Connections Radio, thank you for listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Please join us again next week for another enlivening episode. For more information on Star's classes or services, visit her website at www.starfuentes.com or call the office at 501-609-0660. That's 501-609-0660.